Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 41 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English on YouTube, Spotify and Podcast.de, with social media presences on Blue Sky and Instagram.
The topic of this episode.
Episode 37 was about the first head of government of the Weimar Republic, Philipp Scheidemann of the SPD. In this episode, I will discuss his successor, the SPD politician Gustav Bauer. Gustav Bauer initially was a Reich Ministerpräsident, but when he was overthrown, his title was Reich Chancellor. So he's not just basically, but actually one of the German chancellors.
Political agenda and background.
None. As mentioned in this series, I discuss politicians from the far left to the far right. I put my own political views aside. My goal is neutral, unbiased, and fact-based reporting. Yes, I know everyone says that these days only to end up producing partisan stuff dripping with identity politics. But that's really not my intention. If I don't meet that standard, please let me know.
The sources that were used.
Hans Mommsen, Aufstieg und Untergang der Republik von Weimar 1918 bis 33. Translation: Rise and Fall of the Republic of Weimar, published by Ullstein Propyläen, Berlin, 1998. Bernd Braun, Die Reichskanzler der Weimarer Republik, Translation: Die Reichschancellors of the Weimar Republic, published by Verlag Kohlhammer, Stuttgart, 2013. Gustav Bauer was born on January 6, 1870, in the small East Prussian town of Dahkemen. Although he spent much of his life in large cities outside of East Prussia, including Breslau and Berlin, he spoke with a distinct East Prussian dialect until his death. Very little is known about his childhood and youth. His father, also named Gustav Bauer, was a court bailiff. While still a toddler, Gustav Bauer lost his father to typhus. To support the family, his mother moved with the children to Königsberg. There, Gustav Bauer attended school, and in 1884 he started his apprenticeship as a lawyer's assistant. At the age of 18, fate struck him hard again. Due to an illness, he had to have a leg amputated below his thigh. It's important to understand that at that time a physical disability was still a serious social stigma, viewed with disdain and sometimes even contempt. The only exception was a war injury. Gustav Bauer's subsequent life was therefore particularly difficult. The fact that he made it in politics and ultimately even became chancellor speaks to a very strong will and tremendous perseverance. Gustav Bauer was quite successful in his career. From 1893 onward, he worked as an office manager for various law firms, including one in Berlin. Starting in 1901 or 1902, he briefly ran a pub after losing his job due to his political activities. In 1903, he became a full-time SPD party official, heading the Central Workers' Secretariat in Berlin. All of these positions required quick comprehension, organizational skills, and leadership abilities. Gustav Bauer also had to understand complex issues surrounding social legislation. On page 37 of the Reich Chancellor book, it is mentioned that Imperial Chancellor Bernhard von Bülow makes disparaging remarks about Gustav Bauer in his memoirs. However, the author Bernd Braun considers this opinion untenable and rather typical of the nobility's disdain for social democratic politicians, who were generally considered incompetent by them. How did Gustav Bauer join the SPD? Here we must rely on estimates, since, as mentioned, little is known about Bauer's early life. However, it can be assumed that neither his family nor his hometown led him to the SPD. A court officer would have been very close to the imperial system, and East Prussia was a conservative stronghold. All that is known for sure is that he joined the SPD on November 1, 1891. He presumably came into contact with the SPD in the major cities of Königsberg, Breslau, and Berlin. It is also possible that his status as a physically disabled person brought him into contact with social democratic circles from 1888 onward. Since 1895, Gustav Bauer was chairman of the Office Workers Union, which he founded. When this union merged with the Union for Administrative Officials of Health Insurance Funds and Professional Associations in 1908, he served as deputy chairman. These positions were honorary, as was his position as editor of the union newspaper. Gustav Bauer held other positions within unions and health insurance funds in the 1900s. In 1911, he married Hedwig Moch. The marriage remained childless. Wikipedia mentions a son, but more on that later. He was considered an expert in social policy and a good organizer. From 1912 to 25, he was a member of the Reichstag. He was not a leading figure in either the party or the parliamentary group. While he was considered a good organizer, he was not a particularly good speaker. According to the Reich Chancellor book, Bauer belonged to the minority within the SPD during the First World War that rejected the truce policy. This was an agreement between all parties represented in the Reichstag to prevent partisan strife during the war. However, Wikipedia states that he belonged to the right wing of the SPD, which supported this agreement, so these sources contradict each other here. In 1917, he participated in a socialist conference in Stockholm that unsuccessfully attempted to initiate a peace process. Domestically, he advocated for democratization and a peace agreement without territorial changes. However, he lacked a strong position in parliament. His main support came from the trade unions. In 1918, he became state secretary in the Reich Labor Office under Chancellor Prince Max von Baden, making him Germany's first social democratic minister. His rival Philipp Scheidemann had to settle for the position of minister without portfolio. Gustav Bauer was close friends with the similarly gifted SPD leader Friedrich Ebert, who was also a good organizer but not a good speaker. This friendship catapulted him into the Reich Chancellery. He retained his position as Minister of Labor under Reich Prime Minister Philipp Scheidemann. But then Scheidemann resigned from his post in June 1919. He had declared the Treaty of Versailles unacceptable, but in June 1919 the only options were either signing it or resuming the war, which the Reichswehr leadership, however, declared unwinnable. Details on this can be found in episode 37. The SPD parliamentary group in the Reichstag had actually considered Eduard David or Hermann Müller as new chancellors. However, given the seemingly hopeless situation, they declined to take on the office. President Friedrich Ebert therefore appointed his then 49-year-old friend Gustav Bauer as the new head of government. Gustav Bauer too had opposed the signing of the treaty, but he was able to convincingly demonstrate that he was not a turncoat, but that there was simply no other choice. On page 80 of the Reich Chancellor book, the following entry appears. For the new government, which was now formed solely by the SPD and the Center Party, Gustav Bauer emphasized in his first address as Reich Minister President that despite all the outrage, there was no alternative. He is quoted as saying, "For rejection would not be a reversal of the treaty, and no would only be a brief postponement of the yes." The section continues, "He therefore recommended acceptance of the treaty subject to two reservations. The non-acceptance of Germany's sole responsibility for the war and the refusal to extradite alleged German war criminals to the victorious powers. When the reservation was rejected by the French and unconditional acceptance was demanded, Gustav Bauer spoke again on June 23rd, just hours before the ultimatum expired. In his famous speech, he pleaded for recognition of the hopeless political situation." And here is an excerpt from that speech, found on page 81. "Let's sign. This is the proposal I must make to you on behalf of the entire cabinet. Sign unconditionally. I don't want to sugarcoat anything. The reasons that compel us to make this proposal are the same as yesterday. Only now, a period of barely 4 hours separates us from the resumption of hostilities. We couldn't allow another war to happen, even if we had weapons. We are defenseless, but being defenseless is not being without honor." und Wikipedia the quote continues as follows. Certainly, our opponents want to rob us of our honor. There's no doubt about that. But that this attempt to smear our honor will one day backfire on the perpetrators themselves, that it is not our honor that is being destroyed in this global tragedy. That is my belief until my last breath. The stubborn stance of the Allies, especially the French, forced the government to sign. Refusal would have led to a short but likely fierce summer campaign on German soil in 1919, which would have ended in German defeat. And the subsequent peace terms would likely have been even more brutal. The Allies could celebrate the Weimar government's signature as a success. This success, however, came at a terrible price, for in the eyes of the population and especially the political right, the centrist parties were now associated with the disgrace of this treaty. This burden played a decisive role in the collapse of the Weimar Republic and the rise of Hitler. Gustav Bauer thus had to begin his chancellorship with a terrible decision, arguably the most disastrous of the Weimar Republic. He personally had no choice in the matter. This matter had been handed to him as a kind of malicious inauguration gift. In August 1919, however, he was able to score a victory. The Reichstag adopted the Weimar Constitution. To this day, this remains the most liberal constitution Germany has ever seen, as it included democratic elements that have not been seen since, such as the direct election of the head of state, popular initiatives and referendums. However, it also had weaknesses, as it did not give the Republic any defenses against extremists. For Gustav Bauer personally, this meant that he was no longer Reich Minister President, but Reich Chancellor. Under Gustav Bauer, two key reforms were implemented in Germany. One, the transfer of regional railways to the German Reichsbahn. Two, a tax reform by Finance Minister Matthias Erzberger, which introduced progressive taxation and direct wage tax deduction. Both principles remain in force in Germany to this day. In October 1919, the left liberal DDP, the German Democratic Party, re-entered the government, significantly increasing Gustav Bauer's parliamentary majority. The forced disarmament and democratization of the Reichswehr proved more difficult. On the one hand, the Reichswehr was not particularly cooperative. Many former soldiers had found refuge in the Freikorps, which also had to be disarmed and disbanded. Many of these soldiers were hostile to the Republic and refused to obey orders. On the other hand, they were needed because numerous uprisings and unrest within the Reich had to be suppressed, and the eastern border still saw local violent conflicts. Over the years, disarmament was finally achieved. An Allied military mission in the country oversaw this process, among other things. However, a democratization of the armed forces, the judiciary, or the administration never took place. Anti-Republican individuals continued to dominate these institutions. In a speech before the Reichstag on October 7, 1919, Gustav Bauer specifically addressed the democratization of the Reichswehr. This quote can also be found on page 81. It was, however, the task of the Reich Defense Minister, and will be even more so given the reduction imposed by the peace treaty, to prevent any abuse of the Reichswehr in this regard, to eradicate elements that tend towards such abuse, and to give more and more influence to those men who, not only reluctantly but out of conviction, stand on the ground of the present state order. But anyone who uses military discipline, whoever uses the relationship between superiors and subordinates to incite hatred against the Republic, the government, or against the undesirable parties, I can assure you, on behalf of the entire government, must no longer have a place in the Reichswehr. Gustav Bauer certainly intended to democratize the Reichswehr and was putting himself out on a limb with his speech. His Reichswehr minister Gustav Noske failed to achieve this democratization. On the contrary, Noske placed his trust in anti-Republican military officers who betrayed him in March 1920. The Kapp-Lüttwitz coup was an attempt by right-wing reactionary forces in the administration and military to overthrow the Republic. I will discuss this putsch in more detail in a future episode. Here I can only briefly touch on it. After the outbreak of the coup, government and parliament fled Berlin and eventually reached Stuttgart via Dresden. From there, with the help of the trade unions, a general strike was organized that largely paralyzed public life in Germany and demonstrated the coup leaders' powerlessness. After a few days, they gave up. However, the government no longer had any support after this coup. Reichswehr Minister Gustav Noske was the first to step down. It wasn't until 1969, almost 50 years later, that another social democratic politician, Helmut Schmidt, became defense minister again. 4 days after Noske, on March 26, 1920, Gustav Bauer was also forced to resign from his post under pressure from the unions, the SPD parliamentary group, and especially Philipp Scheidemann. He had only been in office for about three quarters of a year. But his career didn't completely collapse. Under his successor, SPD Chancellor Hermann Müller, he served as Reich Minister of the Treasury and Minister of Transport. He also succeeded in defending his seat in the Reichstag in the 1920 and 24 elections. Under the later Chancellor Joseph Wirth, Bauer served as Vice Chancellor and Reich Minister of the Treasury until November 1922. In 1924, Gustav Bauer fell over the so-called Barmat scandal. Bauer brokered trade deals and loans for this conglomerate. When the corporation collapsed, its owners were arrested for fraud. Gustav Bauer was caught up in this maelstrom. The political right exploited his connections to the Eastern European Jewish Barmat brothers to launch both anti-Republican and racist attacks. The communists, on the other hand, denounced the ties between the Republic and big business. On February 6, 1925, Gustav Bauer resigned from the Reichstag due to this scandal. The SPD also attempted to expel Gustav Bauer, but he was able to prevent this. At the end of 1925, an investigative committee concluded that Bauer had not acted criminally, but had acted negligently. His reputation, however, was permanently damaged, and he stayed away from active politics. Although he probably resumed his seat in the Reichstag between 1926 and 28, if sources such as the website dhm.de/limo are to be believed, he no longer played a major political role. In 1926, he became managing director of the Eintracht Housing Cooperative in Berlin. By 1933, he had transformed the small business into a corporation comprising 3,600 apartments. The Nazis forced Bauer and the entire board to resign in 1933. Bauer was also imprisoned for several weeks on charges of embezzlement. His wife campaigned vigorously for his release. The charges against him were fabricated. This brings me back to the topic of Gustav Bauer's son, which I mentioned at the beginning. According to statements by the Nazi authorities, Gustav Bauer was arrested based on statements made by his son at school. His wife, however, pointed out that Gustav Bauer was childless. The house of cards of fabricated accusations subsequently collapsed and Bauer was released. The tax office and the public prosecutor's office were forced to finally drop the charges in 1935. After that, Gustav Bauer was no longer bothered by the Nazis and lived a secluded life in Berlin. On September 16, 1944, Gustav Bauer died of heart failure after surgery at the age of 74. His wife remained in East Berlin until 1951. 2 weeks before her death, she was permitted to move to West Berlin. She died there at the age of 70.
A few finishing words.
On June 23, 1919, Gustav Bauer spoke these words before the Reichstag.
We couldn't allow another war to happen, even if we had weapons. We are defenseless, but being defenseless is not being without honor.
For someone who was not really a good speaker, this is a very strong statement. Gustav Bauer took over the German government in an exceptionally difficult situation. The Entente gave the democratic government no room to maneuver and, under threat of a new military campaign, forced the acceptance of the Treaty of Versailles. 20 years later, the Second World War began in Europe, which can certainly be considered a consequence of this peace treaty. No chancellor could have acted differently under these conditions. In a terrible situation in which Germany only had a choice between a bad and a catastrophic path, Gustav Bauer chose the lesser, but still very great evil. During his short reign, several groundbreaking reforms and the Weimar Constitution were passed. However, his government failed to democratize the institutions. The Kapp coup brought him down and the Barmaat scandal broke his political neck. During the last years of the Republic, Bauer worked in a position where he could play to his organizational strengths. The question is, was a democratization of the institutions even possible under the circumstances at the time? The Weimar coalition is repeatedly accused of not achieving that. Personally, I have my doubts. The Republic was too dependent on the administration, the judiciary, and the military to allow for large-scale purges. Had this radical path been pursued, there would have been the potential for communist coups or a protracted civil war. I suspect that the Weimar coalition hoped, over time, to organize an evolutionary gradual transformation of these institutions toward a more accepting mood for the Republic. It was a tragedy for Germany, Europe, and the world that the Republic was given neither the time nor a serious opportunity for this evolutionary transformation. To blame all this solely on chancellors like Gustav Bauer is, to put it mildly, inappropriate, in my view.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.